Rosna-born Jerry Tiernan was one of Kerry's great ever athletes. His list of achievements at local, national and international level are absolutely staggering. However, his greatest moment must surely have been when chosen to represent Ireland in the marathon at the 1984 Los Angeles Olympic Games. Here, Jerry recalls that momentous day in his life and how he was part of Irish sporting history. Surely, this Brosna man must rank as one of Kerry's greatest ever sporting sons. Jerry, that was a momentous day between you and John Tracy.
It was a fantastic day, John finishing second and me finishing ninth. I recall the day well, as indeed I would. It was on a Sunday. The marathon was the last event of the Olympics. We had the day to ourselves. It was a roasting hot day, and we raced at 5:15 in the afternoon. I recall about 10 minutes before the race pouring a bucket of water over my head, and 5 minutes later I was completely dry. It was that hot. We ran the opening half mile in the Olympics in the stadium in Santa Monica. I was running at 5 minute miling pace. I says, this'll do grand. And my aim was to keep that going as long as I could. Along the way, running down Santa Monica Boulevard, 8 or 9 miles, it was back in the 20s, back in the 30s, and I heard somebody shouting at me from the multitude, "Up Brosna." And that was an uplifting moment for me. And I got to 10 miles in just slightly over 50 minutes, which was my plan. And I ran the next 10 miles at the same pace. I joined the lead group at 19 miles. It was a pantheon of all the great marathon runners. Everybody was there. It was an awesome field. And at that stage, I fancied my chances that I could perhaps sneak a medal. But I've always had problems in the marathon in that, whereas my engine is as good as anybody's, architecturally, I've had problems with my legs, and I was cramping over the last 4 or 5 miles, so I had to back off. But ultimately, finishing ninth in the greatest marathon field ever assembled was a huge sense of satisfaction for me. There was also relief as well in that I felt I had lived up to the opinion I had of myself. But there was also a slight tinge of disappointment because the Olympics come around every 4 years, and I felt that that could have been my day. 4 years later, I would have been 35 years of age, far too old at that level. But ultimately, I was satisfied because I knew that on my day, I could run with anybody in the world.
It was a great year for Ireland.
It was a wonderful year for Ireland. Kerry won the All-Ireland that year as well. John Tracy won silver medal. John was a fantastic athlete. It surprised me slightly that he won a silver medal. But to have two Irishmen in the top 10, in, as I said, which was the greatest marathon field ever assembled, that was a tremendous achievement.
You mentioned the field, Jerry. What names come to your mind?
Well, you had Saker from Japan, you had Salazar, you had the world record holder for the marathon, Di Castello from Australia. You had Rod Dixon from New Zealand. You had a bunch of Africans. Everybody and anybody who was there was there. It has been by common consent the toughest field ever assembled. Perhaps if I had run it maybe in 1980, maybe I would have sneaked the medal because the field was nearly quite as strong. And certainly looking at the fields over the last number of years, I think both Tracy and I would have medaled in any of the last number of years had we been in that kind of form. People now are chasing city marathons. Money has come into it. Back then, we were much more Corinthian. We ran because we loved to run, and we loved to run for our country. And the running in the Olympic Games was the greatest thing one could possibly do in sport.
What does it mean to be an Olympian from Kerry?
Well, particularly from Kerry, where I have to say we see the emphasis is on Gaelic football. For me, I was mad into Gaelic football until I was about 12 or 13. And then in 1964, I saw the Olympic Games from Tokyo. And that for me was an epiphany. I just had to run. I wanted to do two things in my life. I wanted to run a sub 4 minute mile, and I wanted to run the Olympics. But the thing is, when you want to run the Olympics, when you make the team for the Olympics, you are thrilled. But then when you go there, you want to make a little bit of a mark. You want to create waves. I finished ninth. I was delighted. Perhaps maybe I could have sneaked a few extra higher places, but ultimately, if you said to me beforehand, ninth, I would have said, yeah, I'll take that because I'm a world-class runner, finishing ninth in a field like that.
Yes. Jerry, you weren't born in Listowel, you were born in Brosna. Tell us about your youth.
Well, I was born in Brosna. My dad was a guard, and he was transferred to Brosna. It might have been his first position, and he met my mum there. He was transferred to Ballylongford, I suppose I was conceived in Ballylongford, but I was born in Brosna, which is appropriate because I spend most of my youth, all my holidays from the age of 4 on, I spent with my grandmother and my uncle and my auntie Molly in Brosna, and I loved it. It was It was the perfect place to grow up. It had everything. It was big enough. There was plenty of kids my age. We had fields, we had a handball alley, we had a football field, we had rivers, we had hills. And the sun always seemed to shine. It was a fantastic place. I mean, when I was really young, I would have given anything to just simply live in Broston all my life. It's a quiet place now, and you don't see too many kids there anymore. But when I was young, when I was 12, 13, 15, it was a paradise for kids.
Who's there belong to now?
Nobody. No, my uncle died. My uncle died about 3-4 years ago. My granny died about 20-odd years ago. And, I mean, I do have cousins there, the Downies, but that's it. I will go out on occasions just to visit the graves and, you know, just do the usual thing, walk the laneways that I used to run on.
And your mum is still alive?
Oh, my mum's still alive, yeah. We're living in a stall. My mum's still alive. But I've never actually considered myself to be from the stall. I've always considered myself to be a Broston person. Yeah.
John B. Keane mightn't like that, but he might like it. Jerry, football was one of your first loves. Briefly, tell us about it.
Oh, I love football. I love Gaelic football, and I've a county minor championship medal with Phil Rangers.
Oh yeah.
And my god was Mick O'Connell. I remember one time being down in Killarney, or being in Killorglin, and he was playing a football game, and he passed by after the game, and I just reached out my hand and just touched literally the hem of his garment, and thinking, this is as close to one gets to God in this life. Yeah. But as I said, once I saw the Olympics from Tokyo in 64, that was it. I knew that's what I ultimately wanted. Because, you see, I used to do daft things as a kid. I used to go off on runs on my own. Because ultimately, when you're involved in running, it really is a loner sport. You have to be capable of going off on 2 and 3 hour runs on your own and not necessarily have to need company. You know, so I mean, I was like that. I would just ramble off on my own, and people used to think I was daft. But so I loved running, and I loved football. But when I saw the Olympics, it crystallised firmly for me what I wanted to do in later life. And I wanted to, so when I left Listowel at the age of 18, that was it. I stopped playing Gaelic, and I just said, right, I'm going to see how far I can go in running. A most unusual decision for a Kerry person.
When you say you left Listowel, where did you go to?
I went to Dublin. I went to the training college in Drumcondra. Yeah. I'm a teacher, yeah. And I spent 2 years there, and then I'm teaching out in Corners Court out near South City Dublin. So I've been there for the last, I'm in my 33rd year teaching.
Now, Jerry, tell us, you were running, you were training, you were going away on your own runs. What were your early competitive days then? How did you break into competitive running of any description, tell us?
Well, the first medal I ever won actually was in Dubois. I was passing through Dubois with my uncle, and he loved carnivals, and there was a polka competition on. So he went off to dance some polkas, and I rambled up the street and went into a field, and there was commotion in there, and there was athletics on. There was running on in there, and I just jumped in, and I won a silver medal it was under 12, 80 metres.
From Dubois to Los Angeles.
From Dubois to Los Angeles, quite a jump. But people can make that mental jump.
And from Ardfert to Tokyo by Tom O'Riordan.
Absolutely, absolutely. This is it. This is it. You have to have these ambitions. And along the way, you get encouragement, because I won Kerry championships, I won Munster championships, I won All-Ireland championships. And in running, you want to be the best in your street, then the best in your town, then the best in your county, the best in your province, the best in the country. And you say, I wonder, how can I measure up against the people outside the country? And that's what running ultimately, I mean, the only way you'll end, runners are ever satisfied if they are actually the best in the world. Then there's nobody better than them.
If I can bring you back after winning your first medal in Dubois, then where did you go from there?
From there, there would have been local meetings on in Listowel. I would have won medals there. But it's when I went to St Michael's, the local college. There was two teachers there, Mr Flaherty and Mr Munna. They were fantastic, because we used to train down the Cow's Lawn. I mean, they used to run greyhounds up the hills down there, and they used to run me up the hills. And they didn't know an awful lot about running, but they were intelligent gentlemen. And they said, well, let's talk to people who know something about running. So they wrote off, and they got schedules for me, and they applied these things to me, and they tailored it to my needs over the years. And in my final year in St Michael's, I was second in the All-Ireland schools behind Emma Coughlin. who perhaps is the greatest athlete we've ever produced in this country. That's, we could argue that point.
Sherry, would that be the first time you might have realised that you had potential, or did anybody tell you you had potential?
Well, I knew I had potential, I felt. I knew, I won a race around Listowel, from Listowel out to Fuinneog and back in, which is 7 miles, 7.5 miles. I won that when I was in fourth class. And I was running against kids who were 2 and 3 years older than me. And you know, when you're 10 years of age, a 13-year-old looks an awful lot bigger than you. And I remember running against these, and just jumped in and just ran and just found I could keep going and going and going. And I had this notion that I could run, and I never seemed to get tired. Even when I was out in Brosnan, and we were running over the hills, running over to Mount Collins and wading through rivers, I never, ever, ever got tired. And when I was tired, a night's sleep always revived me. But I would also say as well, Lucy, that the food we ate back then, it was all simple stuff. Like, my dad had always had a good garden. My mother always baked brown bread, always had porridge, always that kind of stuff. No running to McDonald's, no fast food stuff. So in that respect, it was a huge advantage to me that I had the dietary backup that I had. Simple and all as it was just perfect for running.
Now, you went to Dublin, I presume you were around 18 years of age, you said.
That's right.
Now, you won a lot of Kerry championships and Munster championships. If I could put it to you, Jerry, were you coming back down to Kerry? Could you put a round figure, roughly how many Kerry or Munster championships you won?
No, actually I couldn't, but what I could do is this. I mean, I know that in my own club, Clonliffe Harriers, I've probably won 10, 11, 12 All-Ireland team medals. And I won the under-18 1500 metres. I won it as a junior, which is under 20. I won it as a senior. I won national titles as a senior, and I won national titles then over 40 and over 45.
Yeah, but getting back to Kerry again now, you won a lot of Kerry championships and Munster championships.
Oh, I would have, yes. Yeah, I would have. Even in my final year in St Michael's, I won the Munster Colleges 800 metres and 15.
Who would be the names around that era now from Kerry and Munster?
Well, it was great runners. I mean, there was Dan Murphy from Artford, Tom O'Riordan's in Neck of the Woods. Then there was Sonny Fennell from out around Tarbert. Sonny was a great athlete. Sonny went to America on scholarship, but he wasn't quite the same athlete when he came back. And there was also a great runner as well down in Kinmare, a fellow called Tiger Dunhu. Because the first time I ran against Tiger, there was a road race in Farn 4 on St. Stephen's Day, and he gave me a ferocious hocking altogether. He was a couple of years older than me, which means a lot when you're young, but nevertheless, this fella was unbelievable. Could not keep up with him at all. That's Tiger Dunne from Kinmare. I don't know what he's doing now. I think he's a teacher, but I'm not too sure. But I haven't clapped eyes on Sonny Fennell or Dan Murphy or Tiger Dunne in years.
In the Munster scene, then?
In the Munster scene, there was Tony O'Leary from Cork. If you could beat the Cork boys, you knew you were good. And that was for me the goal. I mean, they wore these vivid red running vests, and they were everywhere. And if you could handle those boys, you knew you could handle anything.
And then in Dublin, Jerry, all you running in Dublin, what are the names that you came up against?
Oh, well, the names that would stand out, of course, would be Eamon Coughlin. Yeah. I mean, Eamon Coughlin's about 9 months older than me, so we would have been bracketed in the same age group. So wherever he went, I went. And I have to say, well, okay, he was 1,500, 5K, and I would not have been good enough to beat him over those.
What were your distances?
I would say, I'd say ultimately my best distance would have been 10 miles, because I run for 10 miles in 46 minutes and just a handful of seconds. I remember running down in Bandon, it was in 1982, running 46.15 for 10 miles, and that was the second fastest time in the world that year. Yeah. And I had to deal with a herd of cattle as well that were coming out to be milked, that were being transferred from the field to the milking parlour to be milked as well. Yeah. But that was a time when I just simply, when the gun went, I put my head down. The opening mile would have been in 4:30, and I just keep it going and going and going on. And I just never seemed to get tired.
What other distances then were you running?
I ran an Irish record for 3,000 metres and 2 miles. I ran a sub 4 minute mile. I won national championships over 10K. I won the national half marathon. I won the national marathon. I ran all kinds of distances, really. But if you were to say to me, what would have been my best, what would be the distance I would really make, it would have been maybe between 10 and 15 miles on the road. I could just run at any pace, and I could just keep it going.
Now, I must bring you back to your sub 4 minute mile. How many did you run? Was it one or was it more? And tell us about your first one and bring us through the race. And what was the opposition and where?
It was in London. It was in June of 1976. It was a wet, windy day. I finished third to Rod Dixon, who was a bronze medalist in the 1972 Olympics. He won it in 3:57. I ran 3:59.12. when I was standing, I finished third in the race, and I was standing in the, on the, up in the rostrum afterwards. He was much older than me, and he looked down and he could see that I was kind of starried about the whole thing, because when I saw my name coming up on the board,
what age were you?
I was 22, 23 when I saw 350 something. That's all. That was an ambition realised. He says to me, was this your first one? I say, yes. And he says, you picked a bad day to do it, he says, because he says it was worth another 2 or 3 seconds. But that was it. Now, they don't, you see, they don't run that many miles. It's now 1,500 metres. I've run about 5 or 6 miles, 4.00.23 of a second. But I've run one sub-4 minute mile, so I've run one or 50, I've run one. And I was the 7th Irish man to run a sub-4 minute mile. And I wasn't a natural miler. It was more perspiration. It was something I really, really wanted to do.
Were you the only Kerry Minjorie to have to run a sub-4?
No, I was not. There's a chap, Conway, from down around the Killarney way. No, it's not quite Killarney, but...
Would it be Glenbey?
It could be. He went to college in America. Conway. Frank has run faster than I have. Yeah. Frank was a great athlete, but he didn't... I think he was prone to injury.
Yeah.
But he would have been more a natural miler than me. Yeah. But I was the first.
Yeah. Now, Jerry, talk to us about the venues that you have run in and the big international meets you have participated in.
Well, Los Angeles, of course, would be the biggest. I've turned down a lot of races in places like Australia and Peking, in China and Brazil, for two reasons. Number one, I actually don't like flying. And secondly, to go to these races, it meant being away from school a lot because I mean, I teach as well. So, I mean, I was training and teaching. So, I was the only person, of course, as well in the first 20 in the Olympic marathon who actually worked. So I worked and ran. I mean, I ran in the morning and I ran in the evening time. But I turned down a lot of these things because I felt I just couldn't be away. Because when you're teaching a class of 30, 35 kids, you just can't traipse off for 10 or 12 days. Because a trip to this neck of the woods, you know, you would need to take a couple of weeks off teaching. And my headmaster was a Far East man, Donald O'Mara. He was very, very good to me because even for the Olympics, he said to me, what can I do for you now that you've made it? And I says, look, I'd need some acclimatisation training. And he collected a lot of money for me, and he packed me off to San Diego for 6 weeks before him, because if it wasn't for him, I would not have finished 9th.
Now, before we talk about the Olympics and all the run-up to it, I want to, first of all, try to zero in on the greatness of Jerry Kiernan and the athletes that you met, the great international athletes you met around the world and the big names.
Well, I met...
And how you did against them.
I ran against the likes of John Walker, I ran against the likes of Rod Dixon, Alberto Salazar, Toshihiko Seiko, who was the great Japanese runner. I met the likes of Marit Jifter from Ethiopia, Steve Scott, the American model. You see, we're going back now 25, 30 years. You know, but these were all giants. Yeah, yeah. They were all giants, and I was able to sit at a table with them, I was able to talk to them, we were peers. You know, and that for me gave me huge confidence. I remember one time being in Brussels and sitting around the table, and there was Eamon Coughlin, and there was Ray Flynn, and there was John Walker and Steve Scott and Thomas Fassenhage, and Steve Ovett, and we were having a discussion, and they were all the great milers of that time.
How used you fare against them during races?
Well, you see, I wasn't really a track runner. I mean, the likes of Coughlin would hammer me over a mile, but I would destroy him over a marathon, or I would destroy him in anything over 5 or 6 miles. So you see, when I was running track, I was just killing time before I actually turned to the road and turned to run marathons. I mean, I missed out on the Olympic 1500 metres in Montreal by half a second in the 1500 metres. 8 years later, I was running a marathon, which is 50 times the distance. Yeah. You know, so even though I stuck with track for a while, ultimately, my forte was longer than that.
Yeah. Now, talk to us about your marathon career. When you ran your first marathon, how many you ran, and talk to me about the difficulties, and we leave the Olympics until later.
Yeah, my first marathon was Dublin, Dublin City Marathon in October 1982, and I won that. It was a tough course, much tougher than the present course, and the time I ran that day, it was a course record for 22, 23 years. The first half of the race was very difficult. It was practically all up. A lot of it was uphill. And at halfway, I was there in 64 minutes. And I reckon if I'm up here in 64 minutes and not a bracken me, I'll surely run the second half in 64 minutes, which then would have been a world record. And I just took off down Collins's Avenue, just flying down Collins's Avenue, and at about 18 or 19 miles, inexplicably, I started to get cramps. and there was nothing I could do with it about it. At 20 miles, I was leading by 6 minutes, which is a colossal. I was leading a Belgian by 6 minutes, which is a huge lead to have on anybody at 20 miles. But the last 6 miles, I just lurched to the finish, and I just barely got in. I won it by eventually about 64 seconds, but I was in bits afterwards. But it gave me a taste for it. I said to myself, this is it, this is my event.
Yeah. Now, how many Dublins did you run?
I ran 4 Dublins.
How'd you do?
I won 2, and I was second in one, and I was 10th in the other. Yeah. But there was many years when I felt I probably would have won Dublin, but I was running elsewhere, running in America because... Dublin is fine, and Dublin was good to me, but in the whole scheme of things, the Dublin City Marathon would not be a big marathon. It's big here, yeah, but it's not big in an international context.
So now we'll talk about the international context now, about what marathon you ran and where, internationally, and how you fared.
There was a big marathon. It was generally in America, because that's...
Were you based in America for a while?
I'd lived there for... Let's say if I was running a marathon at the end of April, I would go to San Diego at the beginning of April. You see, after the Olympics, the year after the Olympics in 1985, I took 3 years off teaching. So at the time, I was 32 and beginning to pick up injuries. But I won the New Jersey Waterfront Marathon. I won the Columbus Marathon. I won a marathon in Stamford, Connecticut. I was second in the Houston Marathon. And that was it, really. I was starting to pick up injuries. I was having problems with my lower back. So I'd win a marathon, I'd find then, and maybe 6 weeks later I'd get injured, would be out for 2 months, and then I'd get back in again, and I'd be good then for another race, and then I'd pick up another injury, and that's the way it was. So from about the age of 34, 35, till about the age of 39, when I won my last marathon, I was either winning a race or being injured, and that's the way it was. But that's the nature of it, because I suppose in the last 25 years, I suppose I have run maybe 200,000 miles.
I would imagine, Jerry, in between all those marathons, you were also running at other distances and other venues.
I did everything, you see. You see, I love running track as well, and I love running cross-country. I mean, my colleague Dick Hooper, great marathoner, he just simply zoned in the marathons. He did nothing else, whereas I loved running. I mean, if there was a race on, I'd want to run it. I was just built to run. I mean, what else could you do with this body of mine except just simply run? And that's all I ever wanted to do. So if there was a cross-country race on, which I love running cross-country, I love to do it. If there's a road race on, I'd do it. If there was a track race on, yeah, I'd do that as well. And maybe looking back on it, I should have been a little bit more selective, but that's really what I wanted to do.
Now, talk to me about your cross-country running and the championships that you have won. What comes to your mind? I know you won a vast amount of stuff, but talk to me about your big cross-country wins.
I won the All-Ireland under-18 cross-country, I won the under-20 cross-country, I won it at a senior level, and I won it over 40 and over 45 as well. And I was in the 20s in the world cross-country, which, when you consider you'd have 9 Kenyans in a team, and you'd have 9 Ethiopians, and 9 Moroccans, and 9 Tanzanians, and all these guys from altitude, to make the 20s, it effectively means that you'd be the top man in most teams of the world competing, you know, but it'd be very hard to get in amongst the Africans because they are incredible altogether.
Now, representing Ireland, your international career, talk to us about that. How many times, if you could put a figure? I find, Jerry, myself, when I'm talking to athletes like you that have run a lot, they don't keep great records about what they've run. But anyway, that's beside the point. How many times have you run for Ireland, and talk to me about who you ran with and how you performed and where you performed? How did the Kerry men get involved with Ireland?
I've run several times. If you ask me to put a number on it, I could be out by 20. Yeah. But it was a lot of times. I mean, I don't keep a scrapbook. I couldn't even find a medal. That's just the way it is. When my uncle was alive, he kept the scrapbook. He was the person. I didn't know he was doing it until I found out afterwards that every time my name appeared in paper, he just cut it out and pasted it into a book. But I've never done anything like that. So I suppose, what, 56? I have no idea. It was a lot of times.
Yeah. We put a number of 50, 60 on it.
It could be.
Yeah, yeah.
It could
so be. Talk to us about who you ran with and how you performed.
Again, everything revolves around the Olympic Games. I mean, that was the big thing. There was a photograph in Runner's World, which is the Bible for athletics, and it showed the Olympic marathon field at 18 miles, and they were all spread across the road, and you're running along a tree-lined avenue, and the sun was setting, and it was a fantastic photograph. And everybody, there was 15, 16, 17 people there, all the great, as I said, the pantheon of great marathon runners. And I hadn't quite joined that particular group. I was about maybe 50, 60 metres behind. And I wish I'd joined that group earlier, because I would have been in that, I would have been in that, and that would have been a photograph to blow up, to stick in a wall and say, look, that's my big head there with all those people.
Who were your teammates in those Irish teams?
John Tracy and Dick Cooper.
Yeah.
They would be my marathon. But you have people like Neil Cusick, Boston Marathon winner. You have people like Jerry Deegan, who, when he was in America, took on the great Africans, outdoors and indoors, and competed well with them. You had people like that, I suppose, their names haven't appeared in print for 20 years, so people tend to forget about them. But these were very, very tough competitors. Great runners then, with fantastic runners, and hugely dedicated.
How did you do internationally wise? Was there any big meets that you won at Jury, or what are your memories there?
Well, I suppose our biggest was we finished sixth in the world cross country team in Rome in 1982. Now, to put that into perspective, that would be a far better performance than, say, our Irish soccer team. You know, and we consider them to be a vaunted team. So that for us was a huge performance, because you're up against the Americans. You're up against, you see, in running, it's the most contested sport in the world. I mean, short other than countries like Bhutan and Afghanistan, and maybe North Korea, everybody runs. It's the most natural, most primal thing that a person can actually do is run. And running is pretty much organised everywhere. So there's no hiding place. So if you are the best in the world in some distance, you truly are a global figure. Unlike, let's say, maybe in cycling, where if a cyclist won a world championship, there's only a handful of countries cycle.
Yeah, good point, yeah.
There's only a handful of countries cycle. Yeah. But in running, I'm afraid there's no hiding at all.
Now, if we could turn to the Olympics... And you were one of four living Kerry Olympians. Mm-hmm. Tell us how you qualified, when you knew that you had qualified, and the run-up to it, and the excitement, and we talk all around it. So how you qualified, and when you knew, tell us about all that run-up to it.
I qualified by winning the Olympic trials. It was the Cork City Marathon in 1984, on Easter Monday. It was a freakishly hot 25-degree day. We all finished with burnt shoulders. But I was disqualified that day. I actually won the race, but I was disqualified because...
There was major controversy there.
There was at the time, because a number of officials reckoned that I had contravened the IWF ruling in advertising. I was wearing a T-shirt that was handed to me by Michael O'Connell of Adidas, and he says, well, here, wear that during the race. And I wore that during the race, and afterwards, to my surprise, I heard on radio that I had been disqualified from it. Some of the officials back then would ascribe to me ulterior motives, and that I was running for money, but that's, of course, is nonsense. I was running to make the team, and I made it. But there was controversy. There's no doubt about it, there was controversy. But they couldn't not but pick me, and they picked me. Now, had I finished second that day, they would definitely not have picked me, because I was constantly at loggerheads with certainly two officials in our association back then. To my mind, they were not involved. They were not interested in the good of athletics at all. I suspect this is an Irish trait, because talking to Mick Dowling in boxing and other associations as well, it seems that a lot of officials are in there just for themselves rather than for the athletes.
Now, in the run-up to the Olympics, Jerry, in 84, Los Angeles, did you prepare very specifically for it, and did you go out and acclimatise?
I went out 6 weeks beforehand. I got the last 2 weeks off school, which I actually had to pay for. I had to put in a substitute teacher. I got the last 2 weeks off in June, put in a substitute teacher, and left and went down to San Diego, and spent 6 weeks there. Now, it was fortunate in that the summer of 84 here in Ireland was actually quite a warm one. And so when I went out there, I didn't find San Diego incredibly different from here, strange as that may seem. And I found that I actually enjoyed running in heat, which is strange coming from Kerry. You know, I mean, people go on about hot weather in this country, but I actually loved running in heat. As long as there wasn't heat and humidity, I was okay. The humidity used to kill me. But if it was just simply an ordinary hot day, that didn't bother me. And I acclimatised very, very quickly. And my training sessions were incredible. And I knew that I was capable of doing what I did. The only thing is, I would have to do it in the cauldron of serious competition.
Now, we'll turn to the day of the race itself. What time were you up in the morning? How many were in it, in the field, and who were in it? And bring us through the race.
It was August the 13th. It was a Sunday. I was the last person to actually enroll into the, to enroll in the Olympic Village. I came up the night before because I didn't want to be there for 2 or 3 weeks beforehand, because all I've been doing is looking at these people I had read about, and all I would have done would have given myself an inferiority complex. So I stayed well away, stayed on in San Diego, did my training, minded my own business, because when you're living in San Diego, San Diegans care nothing about the rest of the world. You might as well be on Mars. They just don't know what's happening 5 miles away. And that suited me. I just wanted to train. So when I got up the day before, I had hundreds of telegrams, not a lot from Kerry people. Things like go for gold and stuff like that. I suspect they not realizing what was ahead of me. You know, but the morning of it was a typical California morning. It was hot. It was hot as hell, really. I remember jogging around the training track that morning as a warm-up. You run a few miles in the morning time just to sort of loosen out. And there was one of the favourites for the race, Ikanga from Tanzania, who was jogging around as well. He only came up to my elbow. A small little guy, but I just looked at him and I said, he looks human, you know. We'll see how I get on with him. And myself and John Tracy and Dick Cooper, we sort of hung out together. There wasn't much talk because it's almost like going to your execution, really, you know, without a firing squad. You know, it really is a very tense affair. Dick Cooper was drinking gallons of tea. I was drinking gallons of water. And Tracy was drinking gallons of an unknown concoction.
That was 3 of you running the marathon.
3 of us running the marathon, yeah. You see, in the Olympic marathon, You may only get 150 in a field, but it's the 3 best from the country they're representing. It's not like a city marathon where you may get 35,000 people. I mean, everybody who runs there. And that there was also rumours as well that with the closing ceremony on immediately after the marathon, that they might actually shut the gates of the marathon if one was tardy and one didn't make it back before 2 hours 30. And one did not know how one was going to run in the heat because it was so hot. I mean, it's one thing to train in 30 degrees. It's another thing to race in 30 degrees. And particularly race maybe at somebody else's pace besides your own. But yeah, we jumped on a bus and we went down to Santa Monica. So we actually ran from Santa Monica a couple of laps of the track there and then ran down to the Coliseum in Los Angeles. And we went down to the Santa Monica, just hung out there for a couple of hours, listened to some music, met some friends down there, chatted with them. And as I say, then started my warm-up at about 20 to 5, and the race started at 5:15. And I remember...
Was that a big field?
About 150, maybe 200. Maybe not quite 200, maybe about 150. But I remember some guy took a spill at the very beginning. It was quite congested.
What was your game plan?
My game plan was to check out my first lap for 100 metres, which I ran in 75 seconds, which equated with 5-minute miling pace. And the physiologist beforehand reckoned that anybody who could run 5-minute miling pace in that heat from start to finish would most likely win the race. He was almost right.
Were you expecting to do that?
I was expecting a big race because my training was incredibly good. For the 6 weeks I had off without teaching, I had huge reserves of energy. I found that when I trained hard, if I did a track session on a Tuesday, I found that with massage on Tuesday evening, I could come out and I could run a hard session on Wednesday. I should also point out as well that the first massage I ever had in my life was about 3 or 4 weeks before the Olympic marathon. Things were fairly backward here, and they still are to a certain extent, because I know if it had been a level playing field, I mean, John Tracy had huge backup. I mean, I had my coach, and that was it. And if I had the same backup as the winner, who came from a culture where athletes were sort of treasured and looked after and fostered and mollycoddled, I feel as well that I could have won a medal.
But Johnny, you said John Tracy had great backup. How would John Tracy have great backup when you're running for Ireland? You were running for Ireland, you wouldn't have great backup.
No, but John Tracy was living in America. You see, well, John Tracy was living in America. John Tracy went to college in Providence, and he went there, and he came back to Ireland in 1983 and took a job at Corus Tractala, and John's running suffered. So he says, feck this, and he went back to America, and he went back to Providence, and he had a physiologist, a doctor from Argentina, Dr. Herrera, who looked after all of his training and his diet and things like that, and John then rediscovered his old form.
And of course, Coughlin and Tracy and Sonia O'Sullivan, all those went to America and they lived there. Do you think now, Jerry, looking back in retrospect, that if you had gone to America for 2 years before that marathon, you should have won a medal?
If I had gone to America and gone to altitude training for a year and a half beforehand, and providing I could contain myself, because I was so strong there was every danger I could have just run off the scale as well. You know, I mean, there is the downside that when you have too much time in your hand, but when I look at the levels of energy, I mean, the days when I go out and I would batter myself in training and say, right, that's it now, I'll be knackered bunch tomorrow, and tomorrow would come, and I'd say, hey, I'm feeling okay. It was the rest, because you see, all I ever did between running, I'd run in the morning time for 6 or 7 miles, I'd run 13 in the evening time, and all I did in between was read a book, do a crossword, that's all, a rest. That's all I did. I never, for those 6 weeks, I never exerted myself once except run.
Yeah. Now bring us through the race.
The race itself, the first mile in 5 minutes, I was a little bit scattered really, because it was very hot and I had a water bottle, and the water bottles were on the right-hand side of the road, and I was rambling up the left-hand side of the road. And I said to myself, the 5 miles, we should have come across a feed station by now, but suddenly it dawned on me that it was across on the other side. I found that my bottle, which was distinctively coloured, I couldn't find anywhere on the table. So I grabbed somebody else's. It turned out to be an Italian who was clearly behind me. So I drank his, and I discovered it was water I was drinking, so that was fine. So I drank his all the way. In the meantime, somebody else drank mine, and I discovered...
Somebody else drank his?
Well, no, because I tell you, the person who drank mine was John Tracy. Because John Tracy couldn't find his, and he knew that mine was water, so he drank mine. Which is fine, because it's doggy dog when you're out there. I mean, let's be friends afterwards. Yeah. But during a race, if Tracy got in my way, I'd have pushed him aside, and vice versa.
Yeah.
You know, so we can be friends and buddies afterwards, but not during a race.
Right.
You know, I mean, I was envious of him finishing second, and I was delighted. I would love to have been him. I'd love to finish second. But
you were going well. Anyway, tell us.
I went through the first 10 miles in 50 minutes and 4 seconds, which was spot on, and I was comfortable. And I was actually looking around and I was enjoying it, because it's 26 miles, and more often than not, you're actually running against yourself rather than running against individuals. And the leaders went through in about 40 seconds faster than me. But then at about 11 or 12 miles, I began to pick up, and I went by Dave Edge, whom I knew, running for Canada. Then I went by a fellow called Gerard Niebuhr, who was a silver medalist from the 80 Olympics. I went by him at 13 or 14. And when you go by these named people, you think, Jesus, this is something's happening here. And I remember going by Alberto Salazar, the favourite, at 15 miles, and he was knackered. I remember him looking at me almost as if to say, well, who the hell are you? And I looked back at him and I said, well, up yours I'm going. And I left him and I went off, and I moved gradually up the field, went by Shahanga at 17. You see, Runners World did a profile of who could possibly win the Olympic marathon, and they picked out 12 people. And here was I going by these 12 people along the way, Shahanga. Then I went by Rod Dixon at 18 miles. Rod Dixon, medalist from my previous games. And then I joined the main group at 18 and a half miles, thinking, I'm only jogging here. I can win this. I can at least win a medal. I was only jogging. If the race had stopped at 20 miles, I would have had a conversation with you the way I'm having with you right now. There wasn't a brack in me. But the only thing was, I was getting the first inkling of cramps, because I'm about 6'1", and I tend to slap the ground. I mean, I was once described as having a Formula 1 engine and a Formula 4 body. And generally speaking, you need to have the body as well. I would have been much more suited to running marathons if I was about 5'6" or 5'7", a little bit more compact. But I slapped the ground, and the break came at 21 miles. Charlie Spedding, from England, and Carlos Lopez, the eventual winner, they cut loose and ran a 4:40 mile. And I attempted to go, and felt I could go, and started to cramp.
Was Tracy with the bunch of the set?
Tracy was the bunch. Oh, yeah, Tracy was the bunch. And looking pretty good as well, looking pretty good.
Had you any chat?
I just tipped him in the backside and said, how are you, John? And he just looked at me as if to say, well, what's he doing here? You know, I think I probably startled him in some respect, but at the same time, I was company for him. But John wouldn't have liked it if I had beaten him. You know, and likewise, you know, I mean, there would have been rivalry. Like, we're good friends, but there would have been rivalry. There's no doubt about it. Likewise, there was a huge rivalry between myself and Dick Cooper. We were buddies afterwards, but not during a race.
You were running well under your best time at this stage.
Oh yes, I was running. I was just cruising along, thinking, but I was also cramping. And I know that when I get a cramp, if my calves cramp, that's it. There's nothing I can do about it. I just can't run. I am immobilized. And I said, I had to back off. So I had to back off from running 5 minute miling pace to about 5:10 miling pace. And I knew from past experience that's what I do. So from there on, from 21 to 26, I sort of cruised home. Not under stress, but not capable of going any faster, because I knew that I'd get cramps. And when I finished the race, I actually thought I finished 10th, so I finished 9th. And at that, I mean, I was delighted, but Then I remember afterwards, in the bowels of the stadium, just walking around underneath, and I saw Charlie Spedding, who finished third, and he was having a massage. I had a quick word with him, and he finished third, and I knew I was at least as good as he was. So that was a little bit, I was a little bit disappointed that I actually didn't win a medal, because it comes every 4 years.
Was it your best time? Was it an Irish record?
No, it wasn't an Irish record, but it was my best. You see, marathons depends. It depends on how you run a marathon. I mean, we ran in 30-odd degrees. Now, could you imagine people who go to Spain and Portugal for their summer holidays? Could you imagine running 26 miles in that kind of heat? That's what I ran in. It was my best time. And it still is my best time, because I've run in very difficult courses. If you want to get a real fast time, you go to Berlin in October, where it's 10 degrees and the course is dead flat and there's no twisting and turning. So times are relative to the course you run on. So you could have a person running 2:14 down in Killarney might equate to a 2:09 in London. It depends on where you run these things. But it was my best time, yes.
How did you feel after the following, that evening and that night and the following day? Jolly, did you feel anywhere knackered, as the fella says, in comparison to other races?
My calves were very, very sore. I ran the following day. I went out for a run. I mean, I was in bits early on. But after 4 or 5 or 6 miles, I gradually began to loosen out, because I knew it. I just knew I didn't give it my all.
Now, leaving John Tracy's side for a minute, was your ninth finish... Was there an Irishman ever finished higher than ninth?
In the marathon?
Yeah.
No, there was a very good marathoner from Clare, Pat McMahon. Yeah. He ran very well in Mexico in 1968. Now, he would have been hugely disadvantaged, because in Mexico it's at altitude. And there was very few white men got to look in Mexico. It was won by the Africans, even by their standard, ridiculously slow times. But when you're running at 6,000 feet, you think it's just like running here, just running at sea level, until you go to run. And suddenly you find yourself getting tired, you find yourself clocking very slow times. So he finished, I'd say, about 11th or 12th, and he blistered, and I think he ran the last few miles in his bare feet. He was a real tough man, this fella.
Jory, you give me the impression, and rightly so, of course, you were a near-professional athlete, and to be an Olympian, you must be something special. You give me the impression that you have great regrets about not winning a medal, and you feel, I can know by talking to you, feel in your heart and soul that Jory Tiernan could have won an Olympic medal.
Oh, I'm sure, Rishi, that there's many people who can actually think that. And one can be, look, when you finish ninth, there is no real difference between ninth, certainly, and fourth, because I mean, I had a few stops along the way of the last 4 or 5 miles. So it's very easy for me to say, and I actually do believe it, that without the cramping, I would have at least finished fourth. Because like fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, I mean, they were just up the road ahead of me. They were just, I could almost reach out and touch them. You know, now the first three had gone away. Now maybe I'm losing the run of myself here and thinking I could have won a medal. I certainly would have won a medal, I felt, in 1980 and the marathons afterwards, because the fields were, by comparison, not nearly as strong. But 84 is commonly regarded as being the greatest one.
What was it like entering the stadium to finish?
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. It was the Coliseum where the Los Angeles Raiders play. And there was 80,000 people in there, and a great friend of mine, Tom Harrington, he was there as well, and taking photographs. And it was, it's Roy of the Rover stuff. It's the things that you dream of. I mean, some people dream about Croke Park last Sunday in September. For me, it was running an Olympic marathon and finishing the stadium.
When I interviewed your compatriot and another Kerry Olympian, Tom O'Riordan, he told me he was thinking of Art Firth when he was running in the Tokyo Olympics, and there was flashes of home coming through his mind. When you were running in that marathon, representing your country, and you were an Olympian, what was going through your mind? Were you thinking of home?
Oh, you would. I mean, you're out there for 26 miles, and you don't become engaged the whole time in a race, because you do have to have mental breaks. And you would think of your family. I would have been thinking of my mum and dad going absolutely bananas, and my friends and people up in my club watching it on the television, you know, going wild. There was also a friend of mine as well on the lead. He was a reporter on the lead truck, and he was jumping around the place. So I could imagine the excitement. An interesting thing we see there was a couple of lads from Castle Island out at the race, the Walshes.
The Walsh brothers, the Walsh was great athletic men.
Absolutely, no question. They were out in Los Angeles, and they were along the course. And American TV were so poor at covering it that they covered the first six finishing. They broke for commercials, and they came back in to finish the first American finishing, who was 10th. And of course, I wasn't 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th, or 15th, or anywhere else. So they did not know what had happened to me, even though they were about 3 or 4 miles actually from the Coliseum. And Joe Walsh rang the parish priest in Castle Island and says, "How did Kiernan do?" And he says, "Kiernan finished 9th. So the parish priest got his information from Jimmy McGee, but the boys out in Los Angeles had to ring home to find out.
That's a great story.
Yeah, that is a true story.
After the Olympics injury, what became of you? What role did your career take?
I went back to school. I went back to school within 2 weeks. I was back teaching first class. I was teaching kids that were small little kids, and they were meeting a male teacher for the first time, and they were a bit anxious. And I had mums up to me saying, "Look, Johnny, here's a bit anxious to be meeting a big fella like you." Blah blah blah. And so I was back to reality. So I was going back to school to deal with 35 7-year-olds, and my rivals were heading off to various holiday camps to relax and gird their loins for the next assignment.
What about your running career then?
I then, about 5 or 6 weeks later, I ran a 10 miles down in Dromina.
And it was run by the priest?
Run by Father Kelleher, and it was the best race I ever ran. It came at